CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty. Good morning, everybody. Yes, live and coming to you from various locations around the world. It is the Gareth Cliff Show at just after 6 on the 2nd of March. Yep. We're well into the month that started our lockdowns 1 year ago. Insanity. I know, when you think about it that way, you're like, oh, really? Thanks very much, March. Thank you. That's great. So this morning, because it's a Tuesday, we are very happy to have and lucky to have Candice Mama back on the show. It's nice to see you, Candice. How are you?
Oh, look at you here.
No, it is. It's so good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm so happy to see you, Gareth Cliff and Sia. Like, you guys are glowing. Lockdown's been good for you.
Maybe if you saw me in person, you wouldn't say that.
Yeah. No, I think I've got good eyes. Good eyes. Well, I pay a lot for them, so I hope so.
You got good everything. So while we're doing compliments, lockdown hasn't been too bad for you by the looks of things.
Oh, stop it, Gareth. Yeah.
If this is your 6 a.m. on a Tuesday.
I know.
No, I'm pitching up with two men. So you guys just have to wake up, shower, and pitch up. And I have to wake up and, like, put on a full face and pretend I look like this when I wake up in the morning, which we all know is a lie. Just straight up lie.
I got to tell you, as it gets darker and colder as we head towards winter, it becomes less and less pleasant to wake up at, like, 5, you know?
But you've been doing this for a couple of years now, Gareth. You're not used to it?
It doesn't make it any better. And Sia will vouch for me on this one because you could do this for, what is it now? It's easily 14 years or so that I've been doing this. And it just, you never get used to it. You never go, oh, yay, there's the alarm.
Yes.
That's great. Can't wait to start today. I mean, listen, once I get the show going and all of that stuff, then I'm happy. But when it's like the middle of winter and your alarm goes off, you're like, oh, I hate my job. I would rather work in a salt mine. You start thinking about all the things that you'd rather do, and you're like, oh. And then you suddenly realize, like, this is the stupidest thing to moan about. But, the funny thing is, like, people will find something to moan about no matter what they do. Like, if your job was to wake up and go and put on clothes for your favorite designer every day and model them, I bet you those models complain about their lives. If your job is to count your own money in a vault full of gold, you're going to wake up some mornings and go, oh, that fucking vault. I hate that vault. I wish I didn't have to be there, you know?
That is so true. I think it's a part of the human experience, though. Once we have something, like, it's easy to kind of overlook it a little bit and focus on the negatives sometimes. Well,
and we all have a little bit of a martyr complex. Like, all of us feel somewhere deep down inside that, you know, life could be better. We deserve better. And we love to moan. We love to find something to complain about. All of us, including those who pretend to be, you know, like, motivational all the time and always, always happy and always full of buff. I bet you those people. I'll bet you, Sia, even your friend Oprah wakes up some mornings and she's like,
You reckon so?
Yeah, I think so.
Not Oprah.
She just knows.
Not the holy sage.
I'm telling you, she just knows that her brand is like, you gotta help these other people along, so you can't think about yourself.
Wait, let me try to think. What could she complain about?
Her weight. She's always worrying about her weight.
That is true.
Okay, true.
And I'm sure.
And Stedman.
What a lazy son of a bitch Stedman is. I mean, he just sits
what
there.
What did Uncle Stedman do to you?
Sits there just sponging. Quiet and if it isn't Stedman,
banana bread.
If it isn't Stedman sponging off of her, then it's that leech Gale. And Gale. if it isn't that leech Gale, then it's that ungrateful Dr. Phil whose life she launched and who never gives her enough thanks. I mean, come on, Oprah must be tired of this. God. You know.
No, I think she has, you know, she wakes up, she looks at the acres of land she has the dogs, she has the chefs ready for her. Yeah, I wouldn't complain.
You know what the funny thing is? It's like, so you picture Oprah's life as being fairly perfect because she's had all this success and she can now do whatever she wants with her time. But I'll bet you there's something that she's got to do this week that she really doesn't want to do. Maybe it's that she has to, have some trees cut down in a far-flung corner of her estate. And she doesn't really want to because she loves those trees, or because she's had to hire these people who are going to make a huge noise, or maybe she's got a sore foot. Sia, she stubbed her toe this morning on some expensive piece of furniture as she was moving to the bathroom, and now her whole foot is aching, and she's got to have some podiatrist come through. There's something.
Operative term there, expensive furniture. Yes,
I'm telling you, there's something that bothers even the great Oprah.
Oh, I agree. And I think, you know what it is, though? I think we assume that once we amass whatever it may be, fame, fortune, love, whatever, a baby,
right,
that you're going to be so much happier. But the truth is, you're not actually that much happier. Of course, you're happier than someone who doesn't have those things, I'd assume. But I think Oprah sometimes just misses being anonymous, you know, maybe going to the store and no one being like, oh my God, should I look under my chair? Or like a grocery, you're going to pay for my grocery. Imagine how much people expect from Oprah. Like when she walks into a mall, you're just like, so you're going to pay for this, right? Oprah's got this.
You've just hit the nail on the head. Like somebody somewhere is hoping for her to rescue them. And she's got this weight on her shoulders of all these people she has to rescue, including Gail and Stedman, by the way.
Okay. You know what my new mantra is, though, now? Just try me. Whoever's listening, universe, whatever you are, just try me now. Happiness is also overrated. Give me money. They say more money, more problems. No, give it to me. Let me see. I'll figure it out for myself.
You see, like a drug addict who chases that high, that first high that they ever had that they loved, or someone who is desperate for fame and they let's say they do the best they can in their particular field and they become the world's most famous, whatever it is. After that, you come down so hard because you realize, like, how do I get that high again? And the same goes for people who have tons and tons of money. You look at how these billionaires are always trying to come up with something new, and not because they need to make more money, but because they get bored very quickly. So everybody's got something on their agenda today that they didn't want to put there, that they're not thrilled to have to do. And don't feel sorry for yourself. Seriously, just don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. You have to make your life good today, and we're going to help you do that. We've got our one thing for the week later on, which you must remind me about, please, Sia. But Candace, it's really good to see you. So you've been busy, actually, because you are, first of all, you're turning 30 in a while, which is very exciting, and you seem to be a bit nervous about that, so we'll get into that in a second. But you were at an event recently, an online event, but it's an event nonetheless, with Deepak Chopra.
Oh, yeah, the great. I mean, the myth. I mean, and you see, he is that calm. Like, he naturally is just in that tone of speech. I was. I mean, it was so fun. And I think it's one of those things that you just don't think about happening. Like, I never thought, oh, I'm gonna, MC for Deepak Chopra, or like, interview him or speak to him.
That is so cool.
It was just like one of those things that happened. And I was like, oh, this is cool.
I love
this is really cool.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Tell me, because something happened to me when I was probably in my early and maybe mid 20s. I also hosted an event where I was backstage with Deepak Chopra for like, I don't know, I was probably in his company for maybe 5 to 10 minutes. But because I was at a stage of my life where I didn't fully appreciate the guy, and this is so, I think this probably happens to a lot of people, where you're not in the right frame of mind, or you're not at the right level of maturity, or you're just dumb. I mean, I'm happy to accept I was just dumb. And there's Deepak Chopra, who, even if you're not a very spiritual person, this guy's, he's made massive strides for all of us in terms of mindfulness and understanding the world and getting to grips with those things that we can't always see, smell,
what
touch.
Did you say or do?
No, I didn't embarrass myself. I just didn't. I didn't take advantage of what so many people in the world would pay thousands and thousands of dollars to do. And that is just have a chat to him and say, hey, you know, you are this incredible guru. Where did it start? Or can you help me understand this? Or there's this one idea that I'd love you to help me unpack. And I wasted the opportunity. I was sitting in the same room as Deepak Chopra, and there was only him and me and maybe two other people. And
wow,
I didn't even bother to start a conversation with him, which is so, so lame of me. So when I hear his name, Candace, I just go like crazy because I think about that.
But I mean, I think what you experience is what a lot of people probably in building up their career experience, right? We don't want to admit it out loud, but I think there is this element of you going somewhere, like you're on this weird train to nowhere, but you know in your mind where that is, that you actually forget to be grateful for the opportunities you have as you're experiencing them.
Right.
And then you almost live your life in hindsight because you're like, oh,
yeah,
what? That happened to me. Why was I not more in the moment for that? Now in hindsight, it's so cool. So I completely get it. Well, I think
let's just admit this morning that the real reason we've got Candace on is because we're live on YouTube for the second day running, and we thought we can't possibly have just ugly old me and and Sia, and then we had to have someone else on who would be at least people would tune in to see Candace. You got to take a look at her if you're not on YouTube this morning. So there's
You know what? I just also want to put into the spotlight the fact that I've been having internal discussions with myself. Gareth sent the team a memo on Sunday afternoon, just to say, hey guys, another reminder, we're starting with YouTube tomorrow. Just make sure that you at least look put together. And I'm like, what? So well, I've been here for 7 years and he doesn't think I look put together. So what is put together?
See, I think I very clearly said there that it mostly applies to me and not to you. So
but I love that internal dialogue, Sia. Yeah. It's me.
I swear, I will be honest, yesterday I even put shoes on. Today, no, I don't even care. But yesterday, I thought, okay, let's look put together for the first day of YouTube school.
So we've got Candace here this morning, and it's good to have her on, and I'm hoping that we'll see you more and more because, you know, during lockdown, we need to hear from inspiring people like you. And we'll talk in a moment about, because this isn't an interview, you're really just here to be on the show with us and to hang with us this morning. But I do want to ask you one quick thing, because you've really become one of those rare people who can talk about forgiveness. And we live in a time where people are so unforgiving, man. You know, your dad was killed by that son of a bitch, Eugene de Kock, who I know you've met, and we've discussed this before in interviews.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go over old territory, but your dad was killed during the apartheid regime, and he was killed for being an activist. He was killed for standing up for the majority of people in this country at a time where it was dangerous to do so, and the cost of doing so was potentially death, and that's exactly what happened to him. And you lost him when you were a little girl, and you've spent a large part of your life coming to terms with that and dealing with the emotions and the various aspects of what someone who's been through this horrible situation that you went through as a small child, and you've learned to forgive, and forgiveness is the real crux of much of what you talk about now, and it's one of the reasons that you talk with people like Deepak Chopra. And I'm amazed that we live in a time where someone like you, who's got real reasons to talk about forgiveness and who's had to walk a very difficult uphill path, sometimes against all odds and against your own will, to learn the concept of forgiveness. And yet we live at a time where if you go online and you see people slinging mud and filth and lies and ugliness and vitriol at each other, from a distance, first of all, and sometimes anonymously, and you think about how unforgiving the online world is, I just thought this morning, because I've got you on, and you've kind of, in my mind, you're one of the very few people who can actually talk about forgiveness in a meaningful way. We are in a messy situation in the world where there is no online forgiveness. You know, I don't know if you read this. It's a ridiculous story, and it doesn't in any way compare to yours, but it shows you how crazy this world has become. The Bachelor in the US, the host of The Bachelor, stood up for one of the contestants and said, listen, this girl wore a dress to a party, and You know, so we talked about it on the show before. And now she's being called a racist. And meanwhile, she was the girl who was chosen by the black guy who's the bachelor. And then he turned on her as well. And it seems that once you've been canceled online, there's just no way back. And people have no room in their tiny, shriveled little souls for forgiveness. And I thought, if anyone who is into that cancel culture nonsense is awake this morning and they want to start repairing themselves because they must be broken people, what a privilege to have Candace Mama here to help guide you along that path, because she could have become a shriveled, angry, bitter, resentful soul. And instead, she's this bubbly, delightful, thrilling, positive, happy person who we can't wait to have on the show. Explain how you get there and explain what you think the basic steps are, because I know you've spoken about this so many times. You've got it in your head like very few of us have.
Oh, thank you, Gareth. And I mean, I can't stand cancel culture for obvious reasons, but the biggest one is I think there's this projection outwards, right? So many people are dealing with their own wounds or not dealing with it, I think is the fair thing to say. And what you end up finding online, especially, is the fact that people are so wounded. People are so angry. People are so bitter that instead of fixing internally and saying, what's wrong with me? Why am I reacting like this? Why is Gareth giving me such a rise? They just project, and they project our vomit. And the worst part is there's a community that supports them, right? Because the most thrilling and the most outrageous statement gets the most shares and likes. And, you know, we can go into that. So we live in a world where outrage is rewarded. Right. And that's why so many people are constantly outraged. It's like, oh, the first to be outraged has this moral pedestal that they stand on. And then they get to sling this mud. And the worst part is when once whatever they were slinging mud at is vindicated or, you know, forgiven or whatever, they just slink back into their little Twitter corners. They don't say, I'm sorry. They don't, you know, go out of their way to try and make that person feel better. They just like, meh. You know, onto the next one. Who can we target next? So it's
I mean, that gives me the impression that they don't even care about the issue that they're upset about. Let's say the issue is something really serious. Let's say it's gender based violence, for example, which we know in this country is such a big deal. We speak about it in this show all the time. Let's say that's the issue. As soon as something better or more entertaining comes along, they've moved on like this. The very people who promised you that the reason they exist is to fight gender-based violence. You're like, they're heroes that nobody asked for. And then once they think they've, as you say, vindicated this foe, then they move on very quickly. And it seems that nothing can distract them from, like, Date My Family or whatever else the show might be on TV that's now the new trend, and they hop on board that one. It seems to me like they're undermining their own credibility at the same time they're getting outraged and upset without even being aware of what they're doing. There's no self-awareness whatsoever, right?
Self-awareness, I think, is the biggest key behind cancel culture, right? Most people who are canceling other people believe they're so morally righteous that they've got the authority, because that's like taking on the God stand, right? You're like, I am a God, therefore I get to tell you that you are canceled. And you're like, who? What? Like, on what soapbox do you stand on? And I think the fact, yes, Gans, here.
No, carry on your thoughts.
No, I was just saying, like, the fact that we're so quick to celebrate people's flaws or weaknesses or, you know, when they make a mistake in public, that everyone, you know, will jump on this bandwagon. I mean, it shows us how wounded we are as people. Instead of helping, we're trying to be like, hey, you know, yeah, you did do this thing wrong, you know. Screw like the 20, 30 years of experience or goodness that you've done. Well, this one little act is going to cancel you.
What I'm amazed by is, even if that happens, and let's say that in some cases it is deserved, because there are people who have been called out on social media, people who've been, you know, doing outrageous and dreadful and terrible things. What I'm curious about is there a path to redemption? Because what you represent and your whole story with your dad is, even though the act wasn't perpetrated against you, it affected you deeply and in a very, very powerful and meaningful way. And yet you decided, I'm not letting this get me down. I'm going to forge my own path to forgiveness. And I'm actually going to meet with the guy who ordered the death of my father. I mean, these are things that very few of those people who are Twitter warriors are ever going to be brave enough to do in a million years, let alone in this lifetime. How do you think forgiveness works online, and should it work better?
It should be working better. And I think the thing is with forgiveness, right, especially the way I teach it, is the fact that it is about you. It's 100% about freeing yourself, because when I was in the, I was one of those vindictive, bitter people. And I had to take back my power and be like, you know, me being angry, me singing mud, me walking around like the world owes me something. It doesn't bring back my father, number one. And number two, Eugene is not feeling it in prison. He's not like, ooh, is that a pang in my chest? Candace must be thinking about me, you know? So it really does not impact the person who hurts you at all. It only makes you bitter. It makes you go through life in this really blinded kind of way. And so I think there's always a way forward. Always, you know, but you've got to choose it, and you've got to be ready to acknowledge.
Is it like when an alcoholic gives up alcohol, they have to keep working at it? They never say I'm recovered. They always say I'm recovering. Is forgiveness the same? Like, I've tried to be a better person sometimes because I'm also flawed and full of, you know, human frailties, just like everyone else. And I will sometimes, in a good mood, find it very easy to be forgiving and to be kind and to do the right thing and to say nothing hurtful. But it's also very easy to slip into those dark places that we all know we have. Do you feel like, as someone who's mastered, I'm going to give you the compliment of saying you've mastered forgiveness, that it needs constant reinforcement and you need to remind yourself consciously about it all the time? Or does it just, once you've achieved it, it's there and you've done it?
Wow, thank you, a master. I mean, that's a really huge compliment. But no, I think, you know, it is something I'm consciously aware of, you know, and it doesn't come necessarily to Eugene in and of himself. But the thing is, with forgiveness or trauma or pain, we may experience one big trauma, which for me would be the Eugene situation. But there are other things I've got to forgive, you know, on the daily basis or like on a more regular basis. And sometimes I'll find myself being like, my first reaction wanting to be like, and then I'm like, whoa, you know, and then so I'll train myself. Yeah. I think it's become a lot easier. It's become a lot easier because I understand it and I live it. Mm. So I don't hang on to resentment or anger towards people. And I try not to act from that place, you know. So I think it does become easier the more you do it and the more committed you are to doing it, I think, you know.
Mm, you're a better person than me.
Sia can't even... See, I can't even find it in his heart to say one nice thing about some of his exes, which I think is so difficult.
I even feel bad for the story that I've been itching to tell, that I was preparing to tell after 7 o'clock. Here's just the brief synopsis. A man who built a house for his girlfriend in Nelspruit. The house is worth 7 million rands. They went through a breakup and he's not doing well. So what did he decide to do? He hired an excavator to go and demolish the house.
Oh, wow. Jeez, that's a bit, that's dramatic. You see, you would do that. You'd do that.
Oh, I would.
Yeah, I know you would.
Oh, wow.
Even if it would leave me in the minus digits in my bank account. Oh, that would fulfill me so much.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. The joy in your face.
You know, he takes such sick pleasure in this. Like, I don't, there's not one of my exes that I wish any ill on, but Sia would take the opportunity to be petty like that at the drop of a hat. And you know what? You're not the only one, Sia. Most people are like that.
I believe so, but also I'm the first to say it's not the healthiest thing.
No, sure.
It's not the best example of who you are, but you know, baby steps. I've forgiven my childhood bully. I can forgive my sister when we fought yesterday. Exes are not on that list.
It's baby steps. And also, like, I don't want people, and I always say this, I don't want people to look at me and be like, she must be the ideal girlfriend because, you know, this is, you know, she'd forgive anything because I like, you know, 'cause I've had exes like that, believe it or not. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not really how that works, you know? So I also
have a line.
In my head, I do go through scenarios where I'm like, my God, wouldn't it be great to like drive his car into the ocean? Like he's a prize. Like, I'm like, wouldn't that be great? Just like let him find his keys and like on his little overlooking. He's like, is that my it is. Well, so you know in my head, I run through these scenarios. Do I act on them? No.
I think we've got to keep working on Sia's obvious personality flaw here, but we'll get to that later. I'll explain to you what one thing for the week is in just a second if you haven't done it with us before, because we've done one of these things every week since the first week of January, and hopefully they're little things that'll improve your life. And today's one is really quite interesting. We'll get to it in a sec. First, I want to read this from Tracy. She says, being able to forgive says more about your character than it does about the person you're forgiving. The best way to actually get over your fears is to face it face to face. Candace, you are such an inspiration. Well, there we go. That's Tracy's 100% right.
Oh, thanks.
That's a nice compliment from Tracy.
Yeah, that's true.
So
very true.
One thing for the week is we just take a couple of minutes this time of the morning on a Tuesday to just find one thing that we can all start doing or stop doing in our lives that'll hopefully make it a little bit better. And this morning's one, I discovered that apparently the UN, that's the United Nations, every year they choose someone at random to deliver a speech to the UN. And even in pandemic years, they'll do it, you know, over the internet, like we're doing the show this morning. But the UN is basically going around looking for people. And if you submit your speech to them, and let's say it's about, I don't know, it could be about a big global issue, or it could be about something small in your country or in your city or whatever it might be. But they are always looking to have random people make speeches to the General Assembly, believe it or not. So every year they choose someone. And you can write a speech this morning. And you can actually write it as if you could deliver it to the UN. And you never know. You can actually submit it to them, and they may actually call on you to deliver a speech to all the world's most powerful leaders. Now, imagine that. I mean, maybe you've got an area that you are particularly passionate about. Maybe there's something in the world that you are motivated to discuss. Write a little 5-minute speech this morning. If the UN phoned you up tomorrow and said, we need you to address the world, what would you tell the world? And you can do this.
Wow.
And if you actually go to the UN's website, you'll find links to where you can submit it. But I think all of us should do this as a fun exercise this morning. You know, a 5-minute speech isn't that long. And if you just write down some bullet points of what kinds of things you would discuss, just have it in your head. Think of yourself as being worthy of addressing the world and watch what happens. Because the moment you actually write down a few of the things that you care about and you put them out into the universe, it's just incredible how your whole idea of what your place in the world is improves. And if you can picture yourself standing in front of the whole UN General Assembly, all the leaders of the world, and telling them about something that you care about enormously, your whole, you know, idea of yourself, your whole self-image is going to be massively and markedly improved, even if you just picture it, let alone do it. And it might really happen if you write that speech. So today, draft a speech to the UN. It doesn't have to be perfect, but just start working on it, because you never know. Someone
very
writes,
cool.
Yeah,
wow.
Remember, you used to do this for school.
Well,
you'd have to make a speech about something. You'd have to do a little draft of some issue. Now it could come true.
Here's a funny update on last week's one thing for the week. So the thing for the week last week was to
choose a weapon.
Or rather how to protect yourself, learn how to protect yourself. And I've been talking about it for such a long time. I've been thinking about it. So I just jumped and I've signed up for boxing now. You know.
Ah, look at
great.
You.
Look at this.
My fists are going to be my way of protecting myself. And I was so excited about it. I went and I did a little tour of the place and what will go into a class.
Good.
And then I call my mother, like, Mom, I'm so excited. Signed up for boxing. I said, woo. Then they're going to knock you out. I'm like, thanks. That is my faith flushed down the toilet. Like, no, I can do it. You know, I can. She goes, they're going to knock you out.
Ye of little faith, Sia. Don't worry. But I mean, you've got to trust your mother to tell you, you know, her version of the truth. I won't say the universal truth. Her version.
She knows.
Yeah.
She knows, though. I told them very, clearly. I still need to know where my hand is going versus where my eyesight is. My hand-eye coordination is still a thing. So I'm very happy with a punching bag for the first few weeks.
But it's also a great way to get fit. So, you know, we know Sia's diet consists of like fast food and very little that's bad, that's good for you. So this is also a great way, Sia, when eventually you are old like me and your metabolism no longer lives up to your expectations, you won't be fat because you'll have been boxing for years by then. See?
I'm feeling it now, Garth. So yeah, this right. little...
Yeah, I'm
jealous that you can eat anything and look like that, Sia. What the hell? That is ridiculous.
Not anymore. This macaroon top has to go. I just feel it now on my side. So yeah,
you're that friend. No, you're that friend at a party where everyone rolls their eyes when you say things like that. Right. Oh, I just need to get rid of the last little bit. Oh, yeah. Shut
those,
up.
Those thin model girls who talk about, I just can't believe how fat I am. Yeah. Do me a favor.
At least I have that working against me, because otherwise all I have going for me is the fact that I'm just going to print a photo of my ex and put it on the punching bag. You see, there's certain things, hits and misses with us.
Well, good stuff, Sia. I'm pleased that you're acting on the one thing for the week. And every week we will give you one more thing to add to your schedule so that by the end of this year, we've all got accomplishments we didn't know we would have. Because it's not going to be an easy year. We know that. 2020 was just the warm up in many ways. And we've got lots more to do this year. So let's start by improving ourselves, the things we can. So, all right, headline time. There are a few stories buzzing around this morning. The first one comes from ENCA public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane may soon have to fight for her job. Apparently, there's been an independent review panel that Parliament has put together, and they have a prima facie case against her. The National Assembly Speaker, Thandi Modise, appointed the panel to conduct a preliminary assessment and determine whether or not there is enough evidence showing misconduct so that they can get Mkhwebane out of that post. Well, she's been such a disaster that at this point any excuse will do. But for those people who are in a hurry, remember that we do have such a thing as the natural progress of law, evidence, and the fact that we have a process that we follow. You know, we don't just find someone unacceptable and just can them. We actually have to go through a process, and that due process is massively important in a law-abiding country, even if people like former President Zuma don't like to abide by those laws. So Busisiwe Mkhwebane might be on her way out, and this is the first step in that direction. Guess who's maybe running for FIFA president? Anybody want to guess?
No, because then I'd actually have to try and find qualified people. I'm like,
this guy is certainly, he owns a football team, and he's done well in business, but you'd never have guessed. FIFA have asked three candidates to back South Africa's Patrice Motsepe in the upcoming Confederation of African Football presidential election. A source close to the candidates told AFP the previous incumbent is a guy called Ahmad, so good you had to name him twice. He was banned for breaches of FIFA's ethical code, but is had the ban suspended by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So this is not to be the president of worldwide FIFA, but to be the president of the African division of FIFA. So our own Patrice Motsepe is being considered for this. That's according to EWN.
I'm trying not to let my superficial reasons get excited about this.
What do you mean?
Because this is like the second time that his name has popped up in leadership. And then we go, could he be the president of the whole country? Remember when Global Citizen went well?
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, he brought Ed Sheeran and Usher and Beyonce and Jay-Z. And they were like, Patrice Motsepe did this. He should run our country.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think he spoke just before the president spoke at Global Citizen, and people were chanting president, president. And so look, let's not let these niceties fool us.
Yeah. But also all those idiots who went to that concert were cheering for him just because he brought these artists to them. I mean, you know, you give give people a free t-shirt in South Africa and they'll cheer president, president, president. They don't know what's good for them half the time.
But you me, in this scope of mine, I'm already picturing Dr. Motsepe as well as our first lady, thinking, well, she's done fashion. She would look fabulous, you know?
Sia rates first ladies on purely on fashion and couldn't care less what their politics are. Maybe that's the way to look at it. Because, I mean, Sia, you're still upset about Melania Trump being sidelined. You're a big fan
I'm
of
still
Melania.
Very, I'm still disappointed that we went through a whole term and I didn't get to see her in like 5-inch stilettos trying to garden. You know what I mean?
That's trying to garden. I love that. Yeah. Like she should have been in the grass with those five. I mean, because you know, you've worn 5-inch stilettos and you know how they work on grass. So they would have been the irrigation system anyway.
Should have. This is the tomato that you must all eat to be healthy. Yeah. Love your garden. Yeah, that's what I wanted.
Yeah, oh man. She would have been great if she wasn't married to Trump, I think. If she was any other person's first lady, I think she would have been. She's so cute, you know, and she's so cute. Like, she's very pretty. She's very pretty.
Well, jihadists in Nigeria, in a much more serious and disturbing turn in the news, and this is something that's reported by EWN this morning as well. You know, Nigeria's in the news every week for, and we've gone over this territory so many times. This time, jihadists in the northeast of the country who trapped 25 aid workers, security and humanitarian sources have said, in this humanitarian hub. Scores of Islamic State West Africa province fighters invaded the town of Dikwa, dislodging troops from the military base, torching the UN hub. Apparently, they launched simultaneous attacks on the camp, which is the military base, and the UN buildings. And apparently they have 25 staff there who are sheltering in a bunker, which is under siege by the militants. Frightening, ugly, horrible. It's just another day in Nigeria, I'm afraid. Yeah, horrible story. And then 1 in 4 people will have hearing problems by 2050. That's according to the World Health Organization. Apparently, 1 in 4 of us will suffer from some kind of hearing problem within the next 20 to 30 years. The first ever global report on hearing said the causes of many of the problems, infections, diseases, birth defects, noise exposure, and lifestyle choices could be prevented. Apparently, there are a package of measures which could cost $1.3 per person per year in combating this loss of hearing. Against that, it set the figure of nearly $1 trillion lost every year because the issue is not being properly addressed. So 1 in 5 people will have these problems. The number of people with hearing loss may increase more than 1.5-fold during the next 3 decades. So what are they saying the main reasons are? Well, there's poor access to treatment, and they say that we have unhealthy lives. We have too much loud stuff going around us. There are public health initiatives about reducing noise in public spaces, increasing vaccinations for diseases like meningitis, which can cause hearing loss. And they say that this is something that should be on your agenda. So, as if we didn't have enough to worry about, now you've got to worry about losing your hearing as well.
Gosh.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
The list keeps growing.
This is comforting as we sit here with headphones and earphones on.
Well, listen, I mean, we would not have jobs if it wasn't for people being able to hear. So look after your ears, please.
What?
Exactly. And then you mentioned Melania. Well, Donald Trump and his wife Melania were vaccinated against the coronavirus back in January before leaving the White House. According to the news site, APX, they say that President Trump and the First Lady were vaccinated in January. Joe Biden, who took over as president on the 20th, was vaccinated publicly. And Trump, in a speech on Sunday, his first since leaving the White House, said everyone should get vaccinated. Which I think he's been fairly clear about that from the get-go. You know, despite people trying to paint him as some sort of anti-vaxxer, some of Trump's supporters have expressed skepticism about being vaccinated. Remember, he put this plan in place, which is getting more than 1 million people a day, I think, vaccinated in the U.S. It's incredible. They've got the fastest rollout of any country in the world. It's over 1 million people a day that are apparently being. It's called Operation Warp Speed. And remember, he put pressure on Big Pharma to deliver these vaccinations, which now we are the beneficiaries of here in South Africa too. So you can, two things can be true at once. You can dislike Donald Trump's politics, and you can give him credit for rolling out the fastest vaccination plan in history. And both can be true, right? You don't have to love Donald Trump to admit that part of the reason you've got the vaccine in record time is because of him. And I think credit to Big Pharma, you know, the pharmaceutical industry gets nothing but hatred from us because we all think that they're on a massive profiteering bent, and they may well be, but if they're investing money and time and research, and they've got the best people working on this in the background, and it saves lives, then you really just sound like you're moaning when you complain about them, and you refuse to give them their profits, because frankly, these things do not come cheap. And if we want to cancel, if we want to save ourselves from diseases like cancer and HIV and AIDS and Ebola and COVID, who do you think is going to do that? A bunch of politicians who sit in a room and talk, or the pharmaceutical industry with all of their scientists and researchers and chemists and medical experts who are slaving away in the background to make these things happen? So you cannot have the best of both worlds here if you're not prepared to give a little bit of credit to the pharmaceutical industry. We've got to stop being duplicitous about the way that we don't like them and we won't support them and they're evil, but then we'll take their medicines. You've got to choose which one.
Okay, but look, then he worked on it. He worked on the plan and the rollout, and so he just got a job before he left. It's like, to me, it's like when you pay for the bill at a restaurant and then you're given three suites. You take those three suites, but then as you're about to walk out of the door, you see the whole bowl of sweets, and then you just take a handful more than you leave. So he got the jab just as he had to exit the White House. Ah, that's fine. Okay.
Great.
You're not mad bill. At it.
Yeah, you paid for the bill. You ate. You did the work. Ah, that's fine. Go ahead, Trump.
We are going to be joined in a moment or two by JJ Cornish, who, of course, gives us our African update every 2 or 3 weeks. And JJ is on standby to talk to us this morning. He'll be with us in a second, but I just want to go to Jumeen's message here, which is for Candace, because Candace was talking about forgiveness earlier on, and Jumeen says that Jumeen, are a very vindictive person. In my head, I'm always spitting on someone else's grave. I never act on my feelings, though, and I feel so bad for even just thinking these thoughts. I do sometimes say what I feel, and whoa, is it a glorious feeling. Sure, what do you say to that, Candace?
I love that you finished it with, whoa, is that a glorious feeling, right? It's great. No, I think, you know, it is important to understand that we are human beings. Our first instinct, even, you know, the most righteous, you know, Mother Teresa and those we celebrate, I'm pretty sure they've had thoughts of like, you know, but it's not acting on those thoughts. And it's understanding, you know, that, okay, I'm a human being. I am angry at this moment, but I'm not going to act and express that anger. I'm going to move through it or past it, you know? So yeah, I'm not mad at the fact that she has thoughts, you know, as long as she's not acting on those thoughts.
Well, that's exactly right. You can't punish someone for thoughts, and you shouldn't punish yourself over thoughts. I mean, your brain is working. Some of those things come about unconsciously because you're asleep and you're processing memories and you're processing ideas and filing your important information for the day. And sometimes you do have horrible thoughts. We all do. That's why you also can't hate people for what they think. You can only put them in jail for the things they do. The moment we cross into the territory of thought police, we're doing some very, very dangerous stuff. And you don't know. You never know what's in someone's soul or in their hearts. And that's what makes, you know, the world of kind of social media and judging people online so very difficult, is because when you do that, you're making an assumption that you can read their minds. You can interpret everything better than anyone else, and you know the truth. And it doesn't even matter what people say. It's all up to you. You know, you've got some godlike power again that you're able to interpret stuff that no one else can. All right.
But we're all now thinking of ourselves more highly and as if we are better than everyone else, because that's the social media construct.
Right.
You think about it, the idea of an avatar, to have this idea of who we are, firstly, as just the first step of people engaging with us. It's the best picture of who we are. And then we can post something, and then there's the edit button. And then it might seem very frivolous to bring this up as an example, but there's a filter option where you can edit things and you filter how you look. All of this is building and has built this monster of, this is my best version. Of course, I'm only going to highlight the amazing things that are happening in my life. So actually, I am better than you.
Yeah. And then we we can find plenty of evidence if we're looking for it to make us to make us feel that that's true, you know, even though.
So cancel culture is a bit of an of the extreme example. But then you also have mothers who go, I mean, you didn't, you know, look after your kids, make their food, dance around with it. You know, that's all part of the spectrum for me.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
That's true, though. I agree with your humble opinion.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of humble opinions, someone who doesn't have to be humble about his opinions when it comes to Africa, because he is well-traveled and he's well-experienced when it comes to the continent. He's also our expert when it comes to understanding what to make of Africa, our own home continent. He is JJ Cornish, and it is time for Africanalysis, which is our bi-monthly feature sponsored by the Johannesburg Business School. And we look at what's happening in Africa. Good morning, JJ. How are you?
Bonjour, I'm exceedingly well, thanks, but it's kind of you to ask, nonetheless.
No, it's good to see you. So, JJ, let's just talk. I said to Candace and to Sia this morning and everybody else that we've got a task. Apparently the UN allows one person a year, some random person, to address the General Assembly, and you can actually send them a speech and they might consider you. It's one of the things that they do, and you can go to their website for all this information. But the UN does a whole lot of stuff all over the world that we don't even know about. And one of the things that they did this week, we don't know how effective it's going to be, is that they passed a unanimous resolution calling for humanitarian help to be delivered to countries where there are conflicts, and to stop those conflicts for a little while so that we can have people vaccinated. Do the UN have the ability to make sure that that happens, or are they just saying, please, guys, can we stop fighting so that we can get people inoculated?
Well, you know, it's an excellently posed question, what the UN can and cannot do. I mean, obviously, they send blue helmets into areas where there's conflict.
Yeah.
And does that stop the conflict? I mean, they send people in to stand between the two sides. Both sides have to agree that they need to have the UN there before the blue helmeted soldiers arrive. In this case, it was probably one of the last actions by Britain as the chairman of the Security Council. That was February. And they then went on and said, we need a humanitarian ceasefire to allow the COVID vaccination program to go ahead. Now, when they say they need a ceasefire for anything, any conflict resolution, they have to look at Africa, which takes up something like 80% of the UN's conflict resolution capacity. There are 15 conflict zones on our continent. So it has to work here if it's going to work at all. The question, of course, is have they ever done it before? Well, in 1997, they stopped the conflict in Afghanistan so that they could inoculate people against smallpox.
Oh, wow.
And the polio vaccination that was shoo-shooed in a lot of places and poo-pooed in other places. Nevertheless, in the Congo, in 2010, they stopped conflict there so that they could have the polio vaccination program. So it is working. Now, this is something Antonio Guterres has been working for very, very hard for the last 3 months. And so, you know, one hopes it works. There's so many things with the United Nations. You know, I was correspondent there for 5 years. And it's the easiest thing in the world and the most understandable thing in the world, too, to say, well, shouldn't the United Nations do this? Or, the United Nations haven't said a bloody word about that yet. And the fact is, though, United Nations is that organization where you have to say it is better to have it than not to have it. You know, I'm an inveterate multilateralist. I believe that we should all have some say and that it shouldn't just be the strong. Sadly, of course, the United States, whenever something goes wrong, leads towards a sort of unilateralist policy, as do others. But in the shape of George W. Bush, in the shape of even Ronald Reagan and then Donald Trump, that when it's come to it, they've said, we'll decide, you know, and then the rest of the world be damned. The fact is, countries like Belgium and others need to have a say in world affairs. And so I'm an inveterate believer in the United Nations for all its many, many flaws.
Well, I remember this time 4 years ago, we were all complaining that, oh, Donald Trump hasn't said anything about Africa and he's been in office for almost 2 months and blah, blah, blah. Has Joe Biden done anything for Africa yet? Has he said anything about this continent? Has he paid us any attention, or are we clamoring for attention with someone who shouldn't and doesn't care?
No, I do believe Joe Biden will have a lot to say about Africa. And, you know, as it happens, presidents that start slowly and some that appear to have enmity. I mean, Donald Trump, it has to be said, called African countries shitholes, which is not terribly polite. And the thing is, somebody like George W. Bush, who we thought would do very little for Africa, is one of the presidents that have achieved most for this continent. Certainly the...
AGOA.
The AIDS... Or anti-AIDS campaign. So, you know, I mean, Biden's been in for, he hasn't even had 100 days yet.
Yeah.
And he has significant domestic priorities. So I wouldn't expect him to do something soon. But I think that he will name an ambassador here. I don't know what's happened to the U.S. ambassador here. She had COVID and was recuperating back home. I actually...
she's Lana Monks.
She's the South African tennis player who went off, became an American and then came back as ambassador.
That's right.
Not a bad thing to do, I wouldn't
know. No, and she's
a handbag designer.
That's
as well,
right. She designed a line of handbags which are among the most sought after items in the world. So good for her. It shows you that you know, you can start off in South Africa and you end up coming back here as a great and good person rather than just a business person. So let's talk about.
And in real conflict, too, it has to be said. Gareth, perhaps we don't understand it as well as all your guests present, but handbags are a significant weapon in some conflicts. I mean, and it's not only the satirists who say that. So maybe, I mean, you know, maybe he was taking, you know, the Americans used drones in Somalia and places like that. He used handbags in South Africa. Maybe it wasn't that ineffective.
Well, I want us to talk about Rwanda because we haven't had our eye on them for a very long time. Rwandan legal authorities have tripped over their feet in order to admit that they intercepted privileged and confidential legal material in their prosecution of Hotel Rwanda man on terrorism charges. Just explain this. This guy's name is what? Paul Rusesabagina. Yeah?
Abagina.
Who is that?
He's the guy, if you saw the movie Hotel Rwanda, that was the in charge of the Hotel Mille Collines. It means the Hotel of a Thousand Hills. And he put up Tutsi and Hutu moderates who were in danger of being swept up in the genocide, killed in the genocide, and very bravely held them while the forces of the genocide came and demanded them. He held them. Now, he has been given the Medal of Honor in the United States, various awards for this. He's internationally regarded as a hero for what he did. However, he sided with opponents of Paul Kagame.
Okay.
And that is a bad news thing to do. I mean, as we've learned in our own country, people dying at the Michelangelo Hotel simply because they and people being shot in their driveway.
Yeah.
You know, international borders don't stand in the way of Paul Kagame's revenge.
But it has to be said, right, JJ, there are a lot of people who are big fans of Paul Kagame, and they say that he's the kind of leader that we need in Africa, and look at how he gets these things going, and business is thriving in Kigali, and look at how well they keep their streets clean on a Sunday, and that kind of thing. He has fans.
Yes, no, certain fans, yes, law and order people, and he has in the freedom-loving People's Republic of South Africa many, many fans. Have you been to Rwanda? Have you been to Rwanda? Have you seen how clean the streets are? You know, you dare drive a dirty car in Rwanda and you're in stone trouble, you know? And the fans of Paul Kagame that I've met have... almost to a man or to a woman being mlungus, you know, who would like to see that kind of order in their own country. The fact that he has probably the most parlous human rights record on the continent apart from Eritrea, you know, is something we need to look at, because it's monstrous what he does there. Oh. And it's a nightmare. So he felt Ruse Sabagina felt foul of him, mm-hmm. and went off and sought refuge in Belgium and took Belgian citizenship. And so he was actually abducted to bring him home to stand trial on terror charges, trumped up terror charges. And that's what's happening. Great. Now, the Attorney General and the who's also the Justice Minister in Rwanda, he's said, no, we haven't done anything wrong. But in an interview just the other day, admitted that they'd intercepted mail and intercepted correspondence and were using this in their prosecution of Rusesa Kabagina. And so, as I say, it's an absolute shame. The several countries have expressed their concern about this. Hopefully South Africa will be among them. South Africa, because of his killing opponents within our borders, actually withdrew their ambassador for a while as a protest, which is, you know, pretty heavy duty protest. And one hopes that if we maintain the moral high ground that we often believe we occupy, we'd have something to say about what is happening to the Hotel Rwanda man.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we choose when we're going to be moral and ethical and use our moral high ground. And sometimes it looks like the less we say about these things, the less of that moral high ground we continue to occupy, right?
Well, sadly, this is the case. You know, I mean, there we were when we with Madiba at the helm. We were certainly a country to be envied. You know, there was nothing to touch us. And we have slid and slid and slid from that. And but the fact is, internationally, we're still, I suppose, sort of in the top half of the log. You know, I'm a Tottenham Hotspur fan, so I can stand, you know, falling off the top for a while, as long as you're not completely relegated. But you know, this is the fact. You know, but then you have other countries like Senegal, which don't have much going for them, but have enormous moral weight, and I envy them so much. And I do believe that if we did things right, we could regain a lot of that.
Yeah, I don't know what our reputation is like at the moment, but we did have a couple of foreign ministers in a row who were hardly doing us any favors in terms of our position on the continent. And there are lots of countries. There's the Francophone-Anglophone divide, which you've discussed before, Jean-Jacques. But, you know, South Africa is not viewed as being a moral high ground type place by some of our compatriots on this continent, right?
And mentioning foreign ministers who didn't do that well, you're being kind in omitting presidents who...
Yes, that's also true.
Who actually dragged us through the mire a little, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Well, listen, it's always good to check in with you. I believe just one last thing on your parting shot is Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala has apparently become...
Iweala, yes. You know, she's the former finance minister in Nigeria.
She's taken over WTO head or something?
She's taken over the World Trade Organization. She was chief executive of the World Bank at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, of the IMF, I would say, of the IMF. She's a phenomenal figure and a real fighter, and she took over yesterday as president of the World, chairman of the World Bank. Ascendancy was blocked by Donald Trump for some reason, maybe an anti-African reason, and he wanted to put a South Korean in her place. But the moment Trump fell, the South Korean dropped out, and Okonjo-Iweala came in, and she has had lots to say. She's going to work very, very hard on getting equitable dissemination of the COVID vaccine. That's one of her primary things. But generally, to see that countries, developing countries, get a better deal from the WTO, because the WTO decides on trade disputes. But just for openers, quite interesting, a bunch of Swiss newspapers. You won't really often accuse the Swiss of being politically incorrect, but a group of newspapers said, oh, well, WTO now in the hands of some granny or some grandmother.
All right.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't mind people speaking irreverently. I find that quite amusing. But even even I, with that approach, my ear lobes grow red with embarrassment when I think about these Swiss. Happily, they've apologized. And she said something sort of mollifying and saying, well, I'm very pleased they've apologized, but I've got to get on with this job. So we've been watching her very, very carefully. We're going to be watching her very, very carefully in her actions in the years ahead. She's there till 2025 August.
Okay.
She's got her work cut out, because it's a massive job she has, and a very controversial one. So she's going to be stepping in between the superpowers and the developing countries. But she's hit the ground running, and that is important. I think she's a hardworking woman, and I think Nigerians realize that. They must be very proud of having her in that position.
JJ, always good to see you. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. That is JJ Cornish, and this is brought to you, as it is every couple of days, by the Johannesburg Business School. Candice Mama is with us this morning, and we've got lots to talk about in the next hour, so stick around. We want to hear from you. 0797482090 if you want to send us a message, or you can do so on the chat on Webinar Jam, or you can watch us on YouTube live. This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.